just said not to light anything on fire, but we'll fire from the light of the whole damn room on fire for its homeless. I'm not. In one of the poems you will hear Will Farson read tonight, the name of the poem is Cut. The speaker talks about his father whittling blocks of pine. Is it basswood? Basswood? Sounds good. And walnut into caricatures. Caricatures that smell, quote, fresh as death, end quote, to the speaker. The father chooses knives and paint and staining chemicals for his craft. And the speaker says he wields the knife, quote, as a blessing. Although I'm not sure whether Will meant it this way, I think the poem serves as an ars poetica for Will, that in many ways, when he writes a poem, he is as much the father being observed as he is the observer in the poem. Will's poems are more than caricatures. When he grabs the poetic exacto knife, he looks for a chunk of life to carve into metaphor. For the rituals of father-son relationships, like shooting a gun or cooking bacon. The rituals that he will make you feel with his words, soft and beautiful as fine wood. Indeed, the fresh smell of death lingers over Will's poetry, or at least the threat of death. A father swallows bees. He teaches his son to shoot bullet holes into the names of people in the phone book. He kills the coyotes who haunt their backyard. The stuff of life lives and dies in Will's poems, and I'm excited for you to get a glimpse of that in his reading tonight. And yes, you will be blessed by the way Will crafts his poems. Normally I get up here and I craft some half-assed jokes about the reader. Like with Will, I can talk about how he has a deep love of staring at fish tanks, or how hot he looks in a Boba Fett costume. Or I can talk about how for the life of me, I can't remember the name of this fucking cat, but I like all the pictures on Facebook. But I decided to forego all that tonight, except for this, because Will's poems are so damn good. Will's poetry has appeared in the New England Review, Bower Street, Indiana Review, Baltimore Review, National Review, and elsewhere. He's received an award from the Academy of American Poets and a scholarship to the Bread Loaves Writers Conference. For all you composition lovers out there, that's some fucking ethos. Without further ado, please enjoy the poems of Will Farson.
All right, please drop those movements. Okay, so I'm gonna read some poems for you guys. Can you hear me okay? Okay, this first poem is called Aim. Over and over I shot into a bank of red clay 100 yards down a strip of bush hog pasture. My father paced behind me with a sock full of sand, said, "Here, set it on this." I smiled at the puffs of dust that rose and dissipated. Eventually, there were targets. Paper plates at first, X's he'd drawn in permanent marker, then empty soda cans he filled with water, hung with fishing line from branches. Once hit, water sprayed out, the cans blossoming into metal flowers. What I thought was, wasn't. I really held the gun in my hand, shifted it to the other. The swirled grain of the oak stock slings cracked leather, my reflection a warped blue shadow on a steel barrel. Then came phone books. They didn't move. Opened up the holes on the cover, no bigger than cigarette burns, but sliced through the pages in waves, ripped up whole neighborhoods of last names, half of the alphabet busted to yellow confetti. Goodbye, Peterson, Richards, Ryan, goodbye Baker, Bennett, Berkman, Brighton, goodbye. Inside, real bullets mushroomed no larger than olives. Goodbye Anderson, goodbye Derricks, goodbye, goodbye. Sugar. The summer my father swallowed bees, the honeysuckle outside our house bloomed longer, larger even than usual. In the heat of June, he pushed the mower back and forth, always matching the lines the wheels made in the grass to the edge of the next row as he came back, his dirty white t-shirt draping only where it wasn't stuck to the sweat, his arms powdered with clippings. My father wiping his brow, my father saying the varmints are back at it again, my father saying we can use the rain, saying I should go outside more. My father saying a lot of things. As he worked, he left his open can of sweet tea on the porch railing. Sugar is sugar to any insect. He took a break for a drink, didn't stop until the can was empty. Later, he said he could feel them inside, stinging all the way down. This next poem is a love poem. It's called Scribble. You sit close to me on the floor of your studio apartment. Show me your newest sketchbook. It's nudes caricatured with oversized nipples, fingers, lips. Then two old sketchbooks, self-portraits where you're never smiling, dripped watercolor outlined in ballpoint pen, decoupage receipts, movie ticket stubs, and fortune cookie fortunes basted with one thin coat of white glue. I know you just well enough to not have to say anything right away as you turn each page. The next is filled with scribbled quotes from your most recent ex, besides penciled etchings of his face. You, the song I want to sing but can't. Him in acrylic, him in charcoal, him behind words you drew over and across him, words that run into the neighboring page. You, the drink I want to drink and do. His nose is stronger than mine, his eyes softer. But with each portrait, his features become exaggerated, sharper, turn into something grotesque, something far from the first entry of him. A photograph, messily lacquered in and framed with colored pencil. I want you to look up from the page toward me, but you don't. Outside your window, an oak branch casts our reflection yellow. You're tracing the binding with your finger. You're in them again. Before the cancer, my father would sit in his converted garage workshop after supper with a block of pine the size of my forearm and whittle away at it, a carving knife resting flush in his palm, pulling the blade back to him in long, smooth motions. When he switched knives to start the features, he would take a sip of bourbon from a Bama jam jar, its purple flowers almost completely scuffed off. Each block slimmed down into an outline into a figure into a person. These imitations of German wood carvings, these caricatures, really. A woman in a blue dress, her exaggerated breasts, a man in unhinged overalls, bulbous nose and gaping mouth, stained and painted in crude reds and yellows. It smelled fresh as death, as far as I remember. The sap of a felled tree, the chemical flush of wood stain. Little uglies, he called them. He preferred softwood, basswood, or walnut, something that would do what he wanted it to do, to take the knife as blessing, to accept the prayer he pissed away at. This next song is this next poem is about a Bible story, and it's about a Bible story where Jesus was going around doing his miracles and he was on tour. And at one stop of the tour, he cured this guy of demons. This guy had a bunch of demons, and so he was going to cast the demons out of the guy, but instead of just doing that, he like cast them into a group of pigs and just so happened to be like hanging out in the sky. And I was felt really bad for those pigs, so I wrote them a poem. Love song to the demon-possessed pigs of Gadara. Brave and grazing, the grass tread almost to dirt. You took on what was given to you. Teach me to sleep, and I will teach you to swim. The demons asked to leave the man, naked, shackled, and unshackled, living in a sandstone cave outside of the city. His long hair knotted and stringy, his torso and arms cut with stones he wouldn't unclench. He begged only mercy, begged only to be left alone, but the good Lord chooses who to save. Maybe it's one of those stories, you in the wrong place at the wrong time, heroes only because you had to be. Show me how to be blind, and I will show you how to resist. Just offshore of the Sea of Galilee, it was overcast, the air humid, full of electricity. The soft sound of your hooves pressing into dirt, your hoof prints holy and blameless. I swear in the light, you were beautiful there on the hillside, becoming filled with them, the whole of your body shaking. Give me your courage, and I will give you my name. The silence just before and just after, and the black eyes as you left. No protest, no acceptance either. You ran almost in unison, a dance without music, a curtain call, and the crowd standing, knowing this is what happens once we find beauty. We must watch it leave. One's called What We Are Given. To cut down on the number of coyotes on his property, your father would soak 2-inch squares of sponge in bacon grease, then litter them along the red dirt road. He told you how to stick in the intestines of the animal, starving them from the inside out, until one day, no more coyote. You could relate. Their pepper coat, their eyes already glassy. He didn't have to watch them, so it was easier for him to distance himself. This, his duty to the land, its unplowed fields. How even then you wanted to stray, but you were too young. How even now you can't cook bacon in the kitchen of your one-bedroom apartment without thinking maybe this time, if I'm lucky, it'll kill me too. Off the bed of his truck, he made you toss one, then another. Those little red and blue squares were a death sentence for the next blind hunger who came along, who took of the soft meal laid out before them, who didn't know what they were given until it was too late. I have two more poems. Poem's called Forecast. Each year I want to, but can't, shed my bones, watch myself from any day other than the present. There has to be a way to lose this velvet, all I wasn't in the mirror. I should be growing. This unending rain clinking off the tin roof into the drain pipes. The weather said rain for days. Last night I woke with pain, changes in the barometric pressure I felt in my joints, not wanting to inherit this, but inheriting it nonetheless, from my father asleep downstairs on the couch. I want to wake him and tell him all I dreamed about the deer. This is my last poem, and it's a love poem. Called On Your Way to Work. Let's say I hand you an X-Acto knife and you cut me out of cardboard. Let's say you throw away all of me except for my heart, which by now is really just empty space and an outline, the shape not even anatomically correct. You chose to take the outline because you needed to know here are its edges, here is where it ends. It can only go as far as it can be filled. I stenciled my heart on the side of the building so you'd see it on your way to work. But it's hard to say heart and have it work right. You say heart and you can mean anything. So let's say you're on your way to work. Let's say the air smells like water because it rained last night. And it's too early for it to have faded yet. Let's say you're wearing a houndstooth peacoat, the one I bought you for Christmas, and maybe a man on the street asks you for change and the time. This morning you chose not to wear your headphones, and so this morning you can hear the street beside you. Because of this, everything else feels more real. Let's say the rest of me is just now waking up in your apartment. The bed smells of you, the kitchen of stale coffee. You're probably at work by now. You've probably passed right by my heart and didn't notice the stencil because it's on the side of the building that faces an alley, the color of the spray paint the same as the bricks behind it. But I don't know what to do with what's left of me. So I leave your apartment to try to find you, to try to give the rest of me back to you. I walk the way I thought you'd walk to work, but it leads to the wrong building, the wrong street. By now, you've gone to work, and I should let you go. Let's say I let you go. Let's say that. Let's say that I meant exactly what I said.